Welcome to the Everyday Ultra Podcast, a show designed to help you level up your training, crush your races, and ultimately become a better endurance athlete every single day. Whether you're an endurance athlete as a hobby or someone who wants to be the best in the sport, this is the show for you. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and thank you so much for listening. Now, let's get into it. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and super excited to dive into this episode with you. And as you know, this show is designed to help you be a better ultra runner. And one thing that I really want to share that's helped me be a better ultra runner over the past few months is I actually added a new tool to my toolbox to help with performance and recovery during and after long runs and long races. A number of my clients and listeners have also been raving about this tool now too, because it's been working wonders for a lot of us. The tool is called Play On Relief, and it's an all-natural pain relief spray. It's a first of its kind in the pain relief and recovery space, and it's backed by a patented technology that is anti-inflammatory, long-lasting, and as I mentioned, super effective. I was actually a third of the way into my last 50K race, and I was really hitting a part in the race where there was a lot of climbing, and I knew I needed my legs to really be as strong as possible. So what I did was I went into the transition area with my drop bag. I used Play-On. I sprayed it on my quads, and the instant I sprayed it on, I felt the relief of any other fatigue that I had in those muscles right away. There was an awesome cooling sensation. It was warming up my muscles, and the fact that it was reducing the inflammation, knowing that, I knew it was taking the pain away, and it gave me the confidence and reassurance by feeling that internally in my muscles and legs, which then in turn helped me to push up those mountains, overcome the obstacles, both mentally and physically in the last miles of race, push through, and ultimately win the race, which is amazing. So I can't reiterate how much this stuff has been working for me, and I'm super grateful to Play-On for coming on with this amazing product. Jordan and Eva, who are the founders, they're the mom and son team behind Play-On, and they are just amazing. They care so much about the ultra community, and they even came out to crew me at Javelina 100 in October. And because the product's amazing, because the team behind it is amazing, I partnered up with Play-On to give you a 20% discount off of Play-On when you go to playonrelief.com and use code EverydayUltra at checkout for 20% off your order. You can also go to the link in the show notes as well, but that's playonrelief.com using code EverydayUltra at checkout for 20% off. And so when you do this, your long runs are going to feel better. You're going to feel way less sore on long runs, and ultimately you're going to perform better so you can hit your best potential as an ultra runner. DM me once you try it. I'd love to hear how it goes, and I can't wait to see y'all play on. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you try Play On, and let's get into the episode. What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of the Everyday Ultra Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Corcione, and I'm super pumped for this episode. If you're on Instagram and you are in the fitness, wellness, health, endurance world, you likely know our guests. And if you haven't, where the heck have you been? I'm kidding. But seriously, even if you haven't gone from before, this is a real treat because this guy has made a splash in the fitness, health, wellness, endurance, business community when it comes to Instagram. And he's done a lot of amazing stuff in his career. He's a five-time Ironman finisher. He's completed the Leadville 100-mile mountain bike ride multiple times and is also training for it again as well. He lives a hybrid athlete lifestyle as well as he is also looking to qualify for the CrossFit Games too. But the cool thing is as well, like he really has this mission all around, you know, being better, like no matter where you are at in your life. And I think that's amazing. And if you go to his Instagram, like the first pin page, like post, it's just, it always hits me every time I see it. It's a picture of you, Eric, at like 27, and then a picture of like you now. And you, it's like night and day, like you just look so better, so much better. And I think it's just so cool to see that. And so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about creating a lifestyle that is worth living with, which is Eric is a big proponent of that as well. So we're going to dive into a lot of stuff. But as you can tell, our guest is amazing. This episode is going to be amazing because our guest I know is going to bring a lot of value here. So I'd love to introduce no other than the man himself, Mr. Eric Hinman. Eric, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, man. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate that kind intro.
Yeah, 100%, man. And dude, I've been following along like your journey for the past few years and was grateful for our mutual friend, Jordan Battaglia at PlayOn for connecting us as well, which is a product we both love very, very much. But what's super cool, and I kind of want to like dive right in into like your story, right? And kind of like go into that post that's on like your Instagram page. So I'm curious, like, what was that journey like? And more specifically for someone who's listening at a point where, you know, maybe like they're like, oh man, like, have I hit my peak? Have I hit this stuff? For you, you just keep getting better and better. What are like the key principles of that you've learned in your life that you also share with, you know, the many tens and hundreds of thousands of people that follow you on social media and your platforms?
Yeah, I mean, the two main principles would be compounding consistencies and time blocking. I mean, that's what I learned 15 years ago, is the power of doing similar things day in and day out, and then making sure that the most important things in my life for health and wellness are time blocked into my day. So, you know, very rarely do I miss a day without movement. Every single day in my calendar is 8:30 to 10:30, a gym session, and then generally about 60 to 90 minutes of aerobic activity in the mountains here in Colorado in the afternoon. And, you know, I've been doing that for a very long time now. And, you know, it's amazing when you stick with something for a long time, you know, how good you can get at it. And, you know, I think there's this concept around just consistently being unremarkable, and then all of a sudden you're remarkable. And that's really what it is, especially with endurance sports. I mean, you know this, doing ultras, like there's really no genetic gift you need to be an incredible ultra runner or even to be an incredible Ironman athlete. It's just time. Putting in a lot of time, having the right mentors, understanding the process, because there certainly is a difference between exercise and training for something specific, and then, you know, just doing it for a long time, 10,000 hours, and you can be world class at these endurance things.
Yeah, 100%. And I love that answer so much. And even just in that caption, I know I keep talking about the post, but I really think it's just so inspiring. But in that post, you start off saying like at age 27, like that's when you hired a personal trainer, right? Yep. So like that was the point like that it started, right? And even though it was, you know, just under like a 20-year kind of saga in there, like that was like the first building block. And so to see like you start early on in the consistency to where you are now, just like muscles just popping out of like every area, which is just so cool. And seeing you completing the endurance events that you're doing is really, really awesome. I'm curious, along your journey, like when you first started, like how did you really learn to trust the process? And I want to like deep into that too, because we hear it all the time, trust the process. But you know, sometimes like it's easier said than done, right? Like, especially in the days where we want the instant gratification, like what was that like for you going through your journey to like, cause even so you had like an MCL tear, like in the middle, to also talk about as well. Like, and so how did you learn to trust the process, and how would you encourage others to do the same?
Yeah. I mean, the best story I have around trusting the process is about a year and a half into triathlons. I was mainly doing sprint distance and Olympic distance. I had done maybe one or two half Ironmans. I was starting to look very fit because prior to that, I had a personal trainer and I was doing CrossFit type workouts, which obviously CrossFit lends itself to a certain body type. So I came into the Ironman space with this kind of CrossFit body. So I looked very, very fit. So I'm winning these Wednesday night triathlons at my local triathlon club in upstate New York. But when I would do local races or half Ironmans, this guy, Mike Corona, would beat me in every single one of them. And he didn't look nearly as fit as I did. And I crushed him in the Wednesday night triathlons, which were sprint distance triathlons where I was going ham. I was going all out, every single one. And all of my training sessions, I was going all out because I was coming from this CrossFit type mentality of it has to hurt in order to get fitter. So I ended up hiring him as my coach because I'm like, I don't understand why you're beating me. You don't look like you should beat me. So hire him as a coach. And, you know, instantly he tells me that I'm going too fast. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm going too fast? Like, isn't that how you get fitter? You just run faster all the time? You bike harder? You swim harder? And he's like, no. He's like, you need to build an aerobic engine and you need to build durability. And to do that, you're going to have to slow down so you can put in more volume. And it just didn't make sense to me. And for probably 2 months, like I would follow his duration of workout, but I wouldn't follow the intensity portion. I would still go at a much higher heart rate. So a couple months into him coaching me, he's like, listen, dude, I'm going to fire you if you don't listen to me. Like, you're not trusting me. So I'm like, all right, I don't want you to fire me. I'll trust you, but I just don't get it. When I run at a 130 heart rate, I don't feel like I'm doing anything. And he's like, yes, that's what I want you to feel. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, I finally listened to him. I trust him. And, you know, over a 3 or 4 month window, I start to get faster in these races that I'm doing by doing all of my running between a 130 and 140 heart rate, which for me at that time was like a 830 pace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, prior to that, I was running most of my runs high sixes, low sevens, but I rarely would run over 5 or 6 miles because I was running at a 165, 170 heart rate. It was a pretty high intensity. So, you know, he slows me way down. I'm now able to, you know, run more consistently. I'm running 5 or 6 days a week and I'm putting in more mileage. Instead of say 20 or 30 miles a week, I can do 50 or 60 miles a week at this easy pace. So, you know, that next half Ironman I do, my time goes from like 5:12, which was my first half Ironman, to like in the 4:50s. And it was from doing like no speed training. And I'm like, what? Like, this is really making some sense here. And same with like half marathons, you know, I'm dropping 5 minutes from one half marathon to the next half marathon, no speed work. So, you know, fast forward 4 years, listening to him, executing every single day in his training. You know, I was using Training Peaks at the time and I wanted to make sure like every single, you know, green workout turned red that I did it. So I was just like dedicated to the process. I went from running that 8:30 pace at a 140 heart rate to 2014. I could run 20 plus miles at a 6:25 pace at a 129 heart rate. And you know, it was from doing maybe 5% threshold work. 95% of my training was, you know, just pretty easy miles in between 130 and 140 heart rate. So, you know, that's when I realized like there's a massive difference between exercise and training for something. And that's when I also realized like trust the process. And his famous line to me that I'll never forget was think like a bumblebee and train like a racehorse. A bumblebee, based on its shape, isn't supposed to be able to fly, but because it thinks it can, it does. And then a racehorse just executes. Like, it doesn't overthink what its master tells it. It just races. So, you know, that's what I started doing. Like, positive thoughts. I'm going to get to Kona. I was watching, you know, Kona videos, every bike ride I was on, and just thinking about it all the time. And then, like, I didn't question my training plan. When I showed up to a race or a training session, I wasn't thinking about what others were doing. I was just thinking about, like, hey, I have my plan. I'm sticking to it. And we're going to see what happens on race day. And that worked.
Wow, dude. Amazing story. Thank you for sharing that too. And it sounds like the moment that kind of it clicked was like when you saw the results in practice and then you were like, now I'm in. So it sounds like the hardest part is just like that maybe few months of just trust where you kind of got to relinquish control. And then you like you're a perfect example of this. You just reap the rewards, the benefits, and then it's just like you're hooked onto that too. Like, do you feel like you take that into a lot of like the new other maybe fitness trends or just things that kind of pop up like now? Is that like kind of your approach to a lot of things is like be open? Like, has it allowed you to be more open-minded from kind of going in that trust the process mentality is what I'm asking here.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I feel like there's this progression curve where the first 3 months of doing almost anything, you're not going to see much progression. Mm-hmm. But if you stick with it for those next 3 months of 3 to 6, all of a sudden you start to see the progression. So I kind of factor that into everything I'm doing, whether I'm starting yoga or a meditation practice, or, you know, if I back off on running and start running again, like I know there's going to be this 3 month window where, you know, I probably don't see all that much progress, but then all of a sudden from 3 to 6, like you start getting that hockey stick growth. And, you know, that's when like you commit to something because you're like, I'm seeing progress now. Like, I'm stoked on this. And I'm kind of seeing that with strength training now where, you know, I'm seeing that kind of nice progression because I've stuck with it long enough that, you know, I get into flow state with it. I understand the periodization concept. I understand percentages. And, you know, at this point now I'm just executing. And sure, every couple months I get a little bit stronger now. So I love seeing that progression, but I had to stick with it long enough and I had to back off a lot on running in order to, you know, start seeing that progression with strength. So, you know, another key component to that is oftentimes it's not what you're doing, it's what you're not doing. And, you know, if you want to chase something, you're probably going to have to eliminate a lot of other distractions along the way.
Oh, dude, I love that so much, man. And I definitely want to dive deeper into that too, but I love what you said first is like that acknowledgement, that knowing that like the 3 months of anything is probably not going to feel great. It's going to be uncomfortable. Like we're not going to see the progress. And I know even just thinking about me, like early on into my own life and stuff, anytime in that 3 month period, I would start something, I'd be like, well, I suck at this. So like, you know, I'm just going to throw it out the window. So I love that you have that like conscious, just, you know, 3 month window of just knowing, hey, like, this might suck, but that's okay. I'm going to stick with it and go with it. I love also too, how you ended that answer talking about like, sometimes it's not all about like the doing, it's like kind of taken away. Right. And I think in today's world, it's so easy. And I fall very guilty of this, of just wanting to like add more. So for you, like, and I know you mentioned like for the strength training and running, and I know this is like probably very specific in terms of person's goals or stuff, but like, what are some other things that maybe you either stopped doing that like have helped you to kind of move to where you specifically wanted to be? And also too, like from a broader sense, like how would you encourage like someone who, you know, in a world where there's just so many options out there to really get focused on the thing and like, you know, focus on like the key, you know, and you talk about this a lot, like the principles, the fundamentals, like of the thing they're trying to do to, you know, hit the goal they want to be in their life.
Yeah, I mean, find someone who's gotten where you want to go. That's really the only way to short track success and ask them for their formula. So, I mean, in the Ironman years, it was opposite of what I'm doing now, where I loved CrossFit. I loved, you know, thrusters and strength training. And my triathlon coach was like, hey, man, if you want to get to Kona, you're probably going to have to back off on the strength training a bit because A, you're going to need to lose a little bit of your muscle in order to be faster. And, you know, I've seen various equations where every pound equates to about 2 seconds per mile, either added or subtracted on the run. So if you lose 10 pounds, no other things considered, that could be 20 seconds per mile faster on the run. And I'm sure the formula is similar on a bike. So, and then also like, you know, with all the strength training I was doing, it was affecting my long runs because my legs hurt. If I was squatting the day before, I had a 16-mile run. So he's like, hey, like running is what you need to be really good at, not being able to back squat 300 pounds. Back off on the squatting and start running more. That's your key workout. Hit it. So again, it took me a while. I'm hard-headed to listen to him, but you know, I finally realized he was right. And sure, when I started backing off on a lot of the strength training and the CrossFit workouts, I was able to hit more of those key sessions and then I got faster. And then now it took many years because I love running. I love the feeling I get running. I love running through the mountains. But you know, I've gotten so close now getting to the CrossFit games in my age group that I feel like that's an itch that I have to scratch. But I was still running 20, 30 miles a week in addition to all of the CrossFit I was doing. And I kind of hit this plateau of strength where I wasn't getting much stronger. I wasn't getting any more anaerobically fit. So, you know, finally I backed way off on the running where maybe I run once every 2 weeks now. And that has allowed me to like be fresh in the gym to hit heavier weights and also to be anaerobic. Like running takes a lot out of you, whether, you know, you realize it or not. And to be anaerobic, like you need a lot of ATP, you need a lot of energy. And, you know, running is going to take away from some of that. So, you know, trying to chase a high level of one thing likely means you're going to have to back off on some other things. And again, like you just look at the top people in the sport. Like if you look at the top marathon runners, look at what they look like. They're 138 pounds. They're super lean. They're, you know, maybe doing some mobility work and light strength training, but they're not looking to build muscle. And then you look at the top CrossFit guys and, you know, in the off season, they're not running very much. They might do some running leading up to the CrossFit games, but in the off season, they're building the foundation for the season. And the foundation of CrossFit is strength. You got to be really, really strong. So I had to back way off on my running to build that foundation to get stronger.
Dude, I love that, man. Oh, and I like how there's a few different combinations. Like you started that off by like wanting to find the people successful, hiring a coach, figuring out the formula. And then it's like, even like you mentioned, like looking at the top athletes in the sport, like what are they doing? What's their composition? And then like back formulating that in your training and making that too. And I love, like, I absolutely love, like, and you're in this bucket too. Like I love people who they don't get pigeonholed into one thing, right? So like, you know, for you, you've done Ironman, like you've done like the running thing, you've done mountain biking, like over 100 miles, like which is like super, super cool. You're doing the cross, like there's so many more different things. And a question that I get a lot, and I'm sure you experience this as well, is like people, they want to do so many different things, but they're like, what do I start with now? Like, how do I do this? Right. And like, and so for you, when you think about like prioritizing the things that you want to do in your life in like the fitness world, like whether it is, you know, going for the CrossFit Games or whether it is, you know, doing the Leadville 100-mile mountain bike, which by the way, I love how you talk about your race season as like your suffering schedule. Like, I think that's just so freaking cool. All that said, how do you prioritize the things in your life to make sure that number one, you're fulfilled, and number two, you feel like you can like live a life where you're going to check all, like not check the boxes, but do the things you truly want to do?
Yeah. I would say it's a combination of three things. I love progress. I've always been very progress oriented. I like competing against myself. So, you know, I always have these lofty goals of, you know, finishing under a certain time for Leadville or, you know, getting to the Ironman World Championships, getting to the CrossFit Games. So that's certainly a component to my training. But I enjoy my training. That's another component of it. Like I enjoy strength training. I enjoy anaerobic conditioning. I love mountain biking. So I'm doing a lot of them because of how I feel during and after doing it, which is a big part of it. You know, correlating mental well-being, creative energy, physical energy with the exercise. And then the third component is, what do I have easy access to? I have easy access to the mountains. That begs me to be outside all the time, and specifically mountain biking. That's my favorite aerobic activity that I enjoy. And, you know, it's in my backyard, whereas in Austin, I didn't have as easy of access to mountain biking. So I was playing pickleball for an aerobic activity. So, you know, I'll pick something that's really accessible. Gyms, you know, obviously pretty accessible to me. And wherever I go, I have access to a gym somewhere. So pick things that are accessible to you, pick things that you really enjoy. And then I found tremendous benefit in picking things where I have this either obstacle that I have to overcome or it's a goal I have. And that way I can backtrack my way into succeeding. And, you know, I like seeing just kind of incremental progress over time in whatever I'm doing.
Yeah, I love that, man. And I love how you even put the accessibility piece in there too, which kind of like, because, you know, sometimes people move, they move to different locations, right? And that can try out different things in there too. But also, it also makes it a lot easier to get it done, like once you have like the accessibility piece. So I love that. And I even love you talk about like the progress piece too. Is this something like, do you, when you think about like setting your goals, like do you take very long-term pictures or do you, is it more like on a yearly basis? Like, or are you, do you have like a grand vision for your life? Like, how do you kind of map out like all the things that you want to do? Cause like, dude, like I love how you're such an ambitious dude. Like you're crushing it just on like the fitness side, the business side, like the investor side. Like, it's just so cool to see all the things that you're doing. And so I'm curious, like, is this like, do you take a very long-term play at it? Is it year by year? Like, how do you kind of map out everything you want to do in your life?
Yeah. I mean, I used to chase, like I was certainly chasing getting to the Ironman World Championships. I hadn't done anything world-class yet in my life. So, you know, as I got closer to getting to the World Championships, I'm like, wow, this is incredible. Like I'm definitely chasing this. And you know, I really did have tunnel vision and I was visualizing being at Kona and most of my training rides, runs and swims. So, you know, there was a period of time where I had goals and I was chasing those goals. And now I would say I'm more just attracting things into my life. I have figured out a way to live my life where I feel incredible every single day. I'm surrounding myself with the people that I want to be around. I'm in environments that allow me to thrive. And, you know, the last 10 years, honestly, really since I exited Ironman, things have just come my way. Opportunities have come my way. Incredible people have come my way. Cool events have come my way. And I just kind of let them happen now. You know, with that said, CrossFit Games is something that I am looking to get to. So that's the one thing where I am kind of dedicated in training for it, but it's not the same way it was during the Ironman years where I was thinking about it during each session. Like I'm going in and I'm training pretty high volume, but ultimately I want to feel good day in and day out. I'm not trying to smash myself. I don't want to have days where, you know, I'm achy and super sore. So, you know, I don't push the volume to the extent that I did with Ironman. And I also, you know, I've realized the importance of rest and recovery if you want to be world class at something. I've incorporated that more into my life, but I also like moving. So I move almost every single day. So honestly, if I wanted to be better as an athlete, I probably would be more conscious about like full rest days. But I like moving so much that it's really difficult to get me to sit still. Like I still want to go off and at least mountain bike during the day or, you know, hit a light gym session because, you know, that gives me the mental clarity and energy that I want every single day. So I'm conscious not to smash myself. And I'm also conscious that, you know, I'm training in a way where A, I feel good, and B, if I get to the CrossFit Games and what I'm doing now, awesome. If I don't, ultimately, like, I want to feel really good day in and day out.
Hey, everybody. Just want to take a quick break in this episode because I partnered with a company recently that has just been a game changer when it comes to clothing and apparel that I'm wearing on my long runs. And the one thing that I get frustrated with when it comes to running gear or apparel in general is when it doesn't last long. Whether it rips, tears, or just wears away, it sucks to have to keep buying new stuff. Plus, doing that isn't sustainable for the planet. But I recently started trying this gear that lasts long, has a 5-year guarantee, is super comfortable, has extremely fun colors, which is so important, right? And helps to support clean water programs around the world. The gear is from Jonji, and you gotta check them out. They make high performance running apparel such as shorts, tanks, shirts, jackets, and more, all built to explore the world on the run. Not only do they have a 5-year guarantee where they will replace any product that wears away, but their stuff is super comfortable, breathable, and easy to move in, especially in the winter months when you're bundled up a ton. Plus, 2% of their sales go towards nonprofits working on viable clean water solutions, so it's a way to give back and feel good about where your money is going. They have super bright colors and artwork designed by talented artists all across the world, so you'll stand out on the trail, which is, like I said, one of the most important things. My favorite products have been the Transit Tech Short and the Run All Day Tee. I like the Transit Shorts because they're lightweight, easy to move on my runs, especially when I'm climbing hills or doing faster efforts, because they don't have a liner. And when you don't have a liner, I feel like you can move around a lot better when it comes to doing these faster efforts on the trail. And I love the Run All Day Tee because it feels like you're barely wearing anything out there, which keeps you really, really cool on a hot day and doesn't feel like you're overwhelmed on a cold day as well. So it feels like you're not wearing anything that's holding you down. So I 100% suggest you try out Jonji's clothing. And if you're looking to test drive it, you can get 10% off your order when you use the code EverydayUltra at checkout at Jonji.com. That's spelled JANJI.com. Or you can go to the link in the show notes directly. Use code EverydayUltra to get 10% off your order. And if you're rocking Jonji in your next adventure, let me know and hope you give them a shot. Go to Jonji.com and use code EverydayUltra. All right, everybody, let's get right back into this episode here.
So the goal, it sounds like, is just feeling good. Like that's the goal at the end of the day.
100%. That's the primary goal. And I mean, there's so many other things linked to exercise that I didn't realize before those Ironman years. Emotional well-being, mental clarity. I'm never tired anymore. Like you would think with all I train, and I'm sure people say this to you, like you must be tired all the time. And I'm like, no, if I sit on a plane all day, that's when I feel like shit. If I exercise 2 or 3 times in a day, I feel fucking amazing. Like I just want to keep moving and doing stuff. Like I'm super energized. Like I really feel like energy fuels energy. I don't have a lull in the afternoon. Like I'm pretty on all day until my head hits the pillow at 8:30 at night. It was during the Ironman years where I started correlating exercise, not just with like how you look physically, but how you feel mentally, emotionally, you know, the stress resilience that you build from it, the ability to like take on stress. Like now not much really stresses me out. I've done so many other things that are stressors on my nervous system that, you know, it takes something monumental now to knock me off my rocker. Like I usually don't get upset. I'm usually not stressed out. I'm usually not anxious. And, you know, I associate that with all of the exercise, all of the sauna, all of the cold exposure, like all of these things that I've done to train my nervous system to respond well to stress.
Oh, it's so good, man. And dude, I feel the energy, man. Like you're just bringing on this podcast. Like I feel it. I felt that as soon as like we hopped on together. So it's like so cool to like hear it, like just this high energy lifestyle that you have. And too, like, it's not just your training. Like I mentioned before, you're also like a businessman where, you know, you're doing all these deals, talking with people all day too. So it's not even just like the, you know, the load of the fitness you're taking on, but also too, just, you know, cognitively from all the things you're doing in the entrepreneurship world and still having that energy is amazing. You mentioned like sauna and like a few other things, even like the importance of rest days. Like what are some other things that you do to help to optimize that energy performance throughout the day? Because I know, and it's very common in the ultra running world, like sometimes people get like relative energy deficiency syndrome or, you know, just feeling very tired throughout the day and things like that too. So for you, like, and too, like you're training for Leadville 100 mountain bike and you're training for CrossFit Games. So obviously a lot of stuff as well. You're, you know, moving around and, you know, staying active all day. So like what has helped you, you know, besides like obviously the key benefits of those exercises, but what helps you to really just keep that consistent energy throughout the day and also in your workouts as well?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my sauna and cold exposure routine has been instrumental in allowing me to physically recover, mentally recover, emotionally recover. So I do that every single night that we're here in Denver. We have a sauna in our backyard. We have ice barrels in our backyard. We host people every single night. So I like the community aspect of contrast therapy as well. But yeah, that's been huge in allowing me to recover and just kind of like reset everything at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. I kind of look at it as like blowing on the Nintendo game to, you know, get it to work again. That's how I envision contrast therapy. It's just like that, where after my contrast therapy session, you know, sometimes I feel like the weight of the world is on my shoulders because I've taken on so much and I have so many things I have to execute upon. But after that contrast therapy session, it feels like everything is just like nicely laid out in front of me and I can just tiptoe over it and get everything done. So I love doing that, honestly, more for the mental side than the physical side now. And also the camaraderie of, you know, doing it with other people and having that sense of community around me. I get a deep tissue massage every other week for 90 minutes. And same thing with that. That's just as much for the mental side where, you know, 90 minutes, no stimuli, just completely checked out. And I feel like after that deep tissue massage, I get some of my best ideas because I just allowed my mind to rest for a bit. And I allowed for it to marinate all of these experiences I've collected over time, conversations I've had with people, and you know, my mind is able to make something of it. Kind of the same with mountain biking. I call that my moving meditation, where oftentimes mountain biking, I get my best ideas because you know, you're not bombarded with stimuli. You're just letting your mind do its thing, and you know, it takes you where it wants to take you. I use an app called Nucom that I really like. I don't know if you've tried this or not, but it's a neuroacoustic technology that can guide your brain into different brain waves. So they have this rescue mode on it, which they have studies showing that using it for 20 minutes can equate to 2 hours of restorative sleep. So I like using that. Yeah, it's incredible. Check it out. Super simple app you can download. Just put headphones on. And, you know, if you're checking out for 20 minutes, put that on and it'll enhance your nap experience. I'll do hot Epsom salt baths if I'm on the road, you know, big proponent of getting hot before going to bed, just so your body is working really hard to cool itself at night. I mean, sleep is your number one recovery tool, physically, mentally, emotionally. If I get a shitty night of sleep, like I feel it so much. Whereas if I sleep 8+ hours, I feel great the next day. So, you know, I do everything in my power to get at least 8 hours of sleep every night. You know, from that contrast therapy session to avoiding highly stimulating environments late at night, just having a wind down routine so that, you know, my mind and body are prepared for restoration. And setting the temperature super low, wearing earplugs and a sleep mask. I mean, I tinkered with different things over periods of time. Each year I would like tackle something new. So one year it was dabbling with all these sleep routines and sleep supplements until I found one that worked for me. And I did the same thing with diet and the same thing with these recovery routines. And, you know, now I feel like enhancing them by doing things where there's compounding benefits and you're multitasking without multitasking. So, you know, I could do 60 minutes of Normatec and I love Normatec, but I would rather do 60 minutes of contrast therapy where I'm also getting the mental benefits, the emotional benefits, the community time, spending time with others, having really good conversations. So, you know, I look at kind of everything in my life as, you know, can I get more benefits by doing something else during that same time period? It's like going into the gym and like deadlifting and squatting or doing bicep curls and tricep extensions. Like you're going to get more bang for your buck squatting and deadlifting if you're a functional athlete than, you know, going in and doing bicep curls and tricep extensions. So where are these different things in your life where you can stack benefits and you can multitask without multitasking?
Dude, I love that so much, man. And that was like a masterclass in recovery and maybe just like 5 minutes there, which is awesome. But first of all, I got to try that Nucom stuff too, because like that actually sounds like incredible. But man, I love that you talk about the importance of sleep, the contrast therapy, and just like being able to look at your recovery as like a stack of many different benefits in one, right? Because I think it can be so easy for someone who's super busy. They have job, family, they're thinking like, oh, how am I supposed to add in all these things? And to your point, it's like, hey, maybe look at the thing that checks the box, right? Like maybe you do, you know, sauna with like your family, right? Or like maybe you, you know, to get your social time in, you go for like a walk with someone just to get like the walking in there. So I like how you take that approach to do that as well. Kind of like coming on the tail end of the show, like one thing that, you know, we haven't chatted about that I think I really want to hear you kind of dive in on, because I think it's just so important. And you wrote a blog post on this like a while back on your website, and I just thought it was so good. Was talking about like creating like rules for your life. And I think like that is such a powerful concept, like when it comes to training, when it comes to life, when it comes to everything like that. So talk to me about like creating rules like in your life, and also too, like what are some rules that have like helped you to really succeed in your life, to you know, build this fulfilling lifestyle that you're living now currently?
Yeah, I mean, I really feel like structure breeds freedom, because we all only have so much decision-making power throughout the day. So if you can structure your day to the best of your ability, you're gonna make less decisions. Like, I'm not thinking about what I'm eating tonight for dinner. You know, I generally know exactly what I'm eating and when I'm eating. I'm not thinking about how I'm gonna get my recovery in. It's scheduled into my day. I'm not thinking about when am I gonna get my workout in. It's scheduled into my day. So, you know, that frees up mental bandwidth to have good conversations with people, to be, you know, really on whatever calls I'm on or podcasts I'm on throughout the day. It allows creative power for, you know, writing blog posts and creating content for brands. So I think that's the biggest hack, is coming up with a structure that works really well for you, and, you know, figuring out how to stack them so that you perform best in each. Meaning, like, I generally schedule all of my calls and podcasts after my first workout, because I know that my mind is going to be the sharpest after that morning workout. So, you know, I'm not taking calls first thing in the morning. I'm certainly not taking calls, you know, after my big dinner at night, because I know that's when I'm going to be least on and least sharp. So I try and stack things on top of each other where I know I'll perform best. Same with like the morning workout. I generally do the hardest workout in the morning. That's when I have the most motivation to go hard and lift heavy. You know, as the day goes on, I lose some of that motivation. So, you know, towards the end of the day, that's where I schedule like sauna session, just kind of wind down, and then like learning time at night where I'm going to consume some content instead of create content, because I'm just like winding down and I don't need to be as on later in the day. Same with calories. Like, I build my calories throughout the day. I've noticed that for me, there's a correlation between how much I eat and my mental creativity and clarity. So generally, the less I eat, as long as I'm not hangry, like I'm sharpest. And if I eat a big dinner, like I'm not that sharp afterwards. So I have my biggest meal in the evening because I want a lot of cognition throughout the day and I don't need it as much later in the evening.
Interesting. Do you do any fasting or anything like that? Or
I don't snack much. I've never done a multi-day fast, but you know, I don't know that technically I'm intermittent fasting. I mean, in the morning I'll have some supplements and like Athletic Green. I'll put some collagen or colostrum in some milk. So, you know, I don't like just completely fast through my morning workout, but I'm not snacking much throughout the day. I generally just have 3 to 4 square meals, you know, generally timed after workouts or after my recovery session.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love how you also talk about like the mental benefits too, of just like, cause I know like when I eat something big too, it's the same thing. I just feeling sluggish and everything like that too. Yeah. 100%. Last question before I ask my very last question that I always ask everybody too. Obviously you're training for the Leadville 100-mile mountain bike. A lot of people listening to the podcast are familiar that obviously there's the Leadville 100 run. And then there's also the mountain bike too, which is, I believe, the week before the 100-miler, if I'm remembering correctly. It's somewhere very close in that time frame at least. And I'm curious for you, like endurance training principle wise, like how are you thinking about this? How are you structuring this? Obviously you've done the race before. So also curious to hear like anything that you're tweaking in this plan relative to what you do. Cause at this time you're going for PR. And so like, I'm curious, I always love to hear people's reflections on like past training blocks and into this one. So I guess like to round it off here, what's on tap for you and how are you structuring your training?
Yeah, I mean, this time of year is just kind of base building where I'm riding consistently. I don't really have much of a plan other than trying to get out on the bike at least 4 times per week, riding anywhere from 60 to 90 minutes. As we get closer to the race, so let's call it April, May, I'll start ramping up the volume a little bit more. I'll get some 2-hour rides in, 3-hour rides, but still it's going to be more about consistency, just getting out there 4 or 5 days a week. Yeah, I mean, you know, with mountain biking, there's some skill involved with it as well. Even though Leadville isn't a super technical course, like I just like feeling really comfortable and confident on my bike going into the race. Come May, June, July, I'll ramp up those miles even more, but you know, also factoring in that I have the CrossFit season running simultaneously with it. So I don't want to ramp it up so much that it's massively affecting my strength or strength training. So, you know, I doubt I'll build to anything much more than a 4-hour ride leading up to it, knowing that, yeah, I'm probably not going to be as fast as I could if I dedicated my life to biking, but I also want to be strong and I want to weigh enough that I can move heavy weight for CrossFit. So I'm kind of balancing these two things. As we get really close to the race, let's say 3, 4, 5 weeks out, I'll do some longer rides at elevation. I'll go to Leadville. I'll ride the course. I mean, it's huge being familiar with the course. I learned this with Lake Placid, doing the Ironman year, you know, having trained on the course, like I knew every single corner and bump and I knew where to ride harder and, you know, where to legally draft and, you know, just how to strategically ride it. So, you know, I've done the same with Leadville in years past. Well, the first year I didn't go up there much and I paid for it. So I learned my lesson. And then when I did it last year, I did maybe 2 or 3 3-hour rides on the course to familiarize myself with the fast descents and also the steep climbs, understanding like where I was probably going to have to push my bike and then, you know, where the lines are on the fast descents when you're going 40 miles per hour down a power line. So yeah, as I get closer to the race, it'll become more specific to the race, meaning I'm going to train on the course and I'm going to ride at elevation to prepare myself for what's to come. And yeah, again, I'll probably do a 4-ish hour ride. That'll be my longest ride before Leadville. Mm-hmm. And, you know, having done this same methodology last year, it worked for me last year. And, you know, as long as I'm on top of my nutrition and, you know, nothing goes wrong, I don't crash on my bike, then, you know, it should happen again this year. I know, you know, how to pace it. I've been riding long enough that I understand like what wattage I can hold and what heart rate not to go over. Like you don't want to burn matches in a long race like that. So, you know, there's certain things that I just won't do because I know that'll massively affect me, you know, later in the race. So I'll keep my heart rate generally below 145 and I'll keep my power between 200 and I don't know, there might be some points where it's around 400 watts, but most of the time it's going to be in the mid 200s is what I'd be pedaling at. So yeah, knowing what you're capable of for a long period of time is key in any of these races. And Ironman taught me that, where it was like, you can't just like willy-nilly it. It's too long of a race to just go out there and like, let's see what happens. Like you got to understand how long you can maintain. You got to understand like when you're crossing over into that shit, I'm burning matches zone and not do that. And you got to understand nutrition. I mean, that's a huge component of these longer races is making sure you're getting in enough calories, carbs, and then also the mental side of it. Like I like using HVMN, ketone IQ. I like using nootropics during these races. I mean, during my Ironman years, I probably had 600 to 800 milligrams of caffeine in my system at any one time just to keep like the stoke high, because you know, during these endurance races, like as you get deeper into the race, you have this devil on, you know, one side of your shoulder that more frequently starts saying, you can just quit. Like this hurts. Like just stop. Like no big deal. Like you don't have to do this. And you got to keep brushing that devil off your shoulder and be like, no, man, I came out here. I'm going to do well. I want to do this time. Like just keep pushing. And then that devil just keeps popping up on your left shoulder and you got to brush it off. And I feel like things like HVMN and nootropics kind of help with that focus of just like sticking to your goal and not looking at your bike computer, not thinking about how long you've been exercising, not thinking about how much further you have to go, just kind of focusing on 1 mile at a time.
Oh, dude, I love that, man. And that is all great principles, man. You are dialed in and ready to go. And I love that analogy of brushing the demon off, which is amazing. So I'm excited to follow along. Everybody too listening, please follow along, Eric. I'll put a link to all of his socials, website, everything in the show notes. Follow along his stuff. And he is a great, great content creator. And he's going to crush it at Leadville and the CrossFit Games and everything too. I know you got to jump too, but real quick in like 20 seconds or less before I let you go here, what can our listeners do every single day to be a better endurance athlete?
Oh man, movement is medicine. I mean, that is my moniker that I live by, is just like moving. I mean, during the Ironman years, I was walking upwards of 6 to 8 miles a day. I was just trying to stay on my feet a lot. You know, I'm standing right now while I'm on this podcast, and I had a treadmill during those years where I was just moving all the time. And that's a lot of endurance, especially, you know, endurance running is just time under tension, time being on your feet and getting used to being on your feet for long periods of time. So yeah, I mean, as simple as just like walking a lot.
I love it, man. The time on feet. And as ultra runners, like we totally get that too. So that is great, great advice. Eric, dude, this 40 minutes was incredibly packed with so much value. I appreciate you, man. Looking forward to staying in touch. Good best wishes on all the rest of your training. I know you're going to crush it. And thanks again for coming on the show, man. I appreciate you.
Thanks, Joe.
Awesome, man. Take care. Have a good one.
You too.